There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. 1206 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Brand new week to work with. I'm glad you're here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Wide-ranging show today, as we try to do most days. This hour, yeah, we will take it to Washington and talk about what's going on there. A couple of big stories. Cameron Smith will join us to talk about. And also in hour number two, did you just hear the news update about the Cajun Navy delivering goods, continuing to rescue people, help out people in the Carolinas as the floods are still a big, big problem in the aftermath of Florence. What about that? What about when we talk about what's done to get areas ready to deal with hurricanes on the coast, what's done to get the interior areas ready for the flooding that comes with it? Craig Colton, a professor of geography at LSU, is going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour to talk about this. He's written a couple books about it, and also he will lay out the case for, you know what, we've done a lot. I think it's interesting. We've done a lot as it comes to getting ready for these events right there on the coast. We continue to do better, but we've kind of ignored what happens inland. I mean, since back in the 50s, they decided whether they're going to put levees around every city or on every river. We didn't do that. And now the flooding becomes a big, big issue and big cost to taxpayers as well, obviously, as the homeowners, and a big disruption of their life. We'll talk about that with a professor who looks at this kind of stuff in the 1 o'clock hour. All right, this hour, yeah, we'll talk about Kavanaugh. We'll talk about Rosenstein as well. And people right now getting removed from the rotunda. I was just on one of our monitors in here, saw that as the protesters are, I saw one man being removed. Protesters there at the Senate making their voices heard, trying to get Susan Collins to not vote to confirm Kavanaugh. I thought that was already kind of, that was already going to happen. I thought that was one of the Republican defections, but protesters, which I don't know how you get so many protesters that don't, they have got to be, and this is not conspiracy theory stuff, it's just like how the world works. There has to be payroll. Has to be payroll for protesters. How many people can just be gone, like, on all these Mondays and everything to be protesting for days on end, weeks on end, and not get a check? Maybe they're all independently wealthy. Maybe they are. But I'm going to guess that the money's got to come from somewhere. So, but we'll talk about that. Also, the Rosenstein angle we'll get into right now, as this is... It's strange. They had like cameras trained on the White House to see if Rosenstein was going to pull up. Story from Wall Street Journal says Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, Rosenstein is at the White House and expects to be fired by President Trump, according to a person familiar with the matter, creating an uncertain situation at the top of the Justice Department and in the special counsel's probe into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. The situation remained fluid, however, as another person familiar with the matter said Mr. Rosenstein is expected to resign and that discussions have already been underway about his departure all weekend. Mr. Rosenstein has not submitted his resignation, according to the person. Okay, so here you go. As you listen to whatever somebody has the inside scoop, you have one person saying, I mean, this is what I like. Let's figure out which source is worth their salt. One says Rosenstein's been fired. The other source says he's expected to resign but has not tendered his resignation. I mean, those are different things, right? Development comes after reports last week that Mr. Rosenstein in the spring secretly recorded President Trump and recruiting cabinet members to help remove him from office, according to a memo written by former FBI Acting Director Andrew McCabe. Now, Mr. Rosenstein has disputed those assertions in a statement released on Friday. He said, "I never pursued or authorized recording of the president, and any suggestion that I have ever advocated for the removal of the president is absolutely false." Okay, there's going to be another one. Who's lying? I mean, either you recorded the president or you didn't. Can we ever get to the bottom of that? One person in the room, when Mr. Rosenstein mentioned secret recordings, said that he was clearly sarcastic and didn't seriously consider it, according to an email from a person provided to the Justice Department on Friday. Now, earlier in his tenure, Mr. Rosenstein had a rocky relationship with Mr. Trump, people familiar with the matter said. He was a regular target of the president's complaints about special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into possible collusion between Moscow and Mr. Trump's 2016 campaign and any possible obstructions of justice. Mr. Trump, who denies collusion or obstruction, was warned by aides back in April against firing Rosenstein. Once again, according to people familiar with the matter. I mean, Wall Street Journal, y'all are good, but my goodness. This is nothing but, well, this person said and this other person said that person wasn't really saying that and didn't mean it. Can we get some name sources at some point? But in recent months, the relationship between the two men has improved, writes the Wall Street Journal, according to people familiar with the matter, as Mr. Rosenstein has regularly visited the White House and navigated sometimes competing demands from the president and his own department. Mr. Trump said last month that his rapport with Mr. Rosenstein was fantastic. Despite the warmer relationship, Democrats have expressed concern that Mr. Trump would try to remove Mr. Rosenstein, given his role as the overseer of the Russia probe. Mr. Rosenstein routinely briefed the president, including aspects of the Russia investigation, and has largely tried to satisfy the president's congressional allies, who have demanded an increasingly sensitive information about the details of the probe. Okay. That story, while it brings up a subject we'll talk about with Cameron Smith when we get back, it'll bring up that story about the Rosenstein. There's the Wall Street Journal, and I'm sure somebody says, that's not a real good news source. Wall Street Journal, pretty solid news source, and it is letting entities argue back and forth that are unnamed sources. One unnamed source says this, and another person familiar with the matter says that, and then somebody else says, who's not named either, says that the person that was saying the first thing was just joking. I mean, you understand how our heads are swimming with this stuff? This is, I put this up on my Twitter feed, but Wall Street Journal, I'm not angry that the Wall Street Journal did the story. They need to do the story. Absolutely. But it's just like, this is where we are. You read through the only two people named in this story, unless I missed one here, are President Trump and Rod Rosenstein. So only, okay, Mueller's name somewhere in the thing, but I mean, those are the only, everybody else, at least three players here, are people familiar with the matter, people unnamed. And I really do like the fact that one unnamed source is correcting the other unnamed source. You have two levels. Like, this unnamed source says the other. Didn't they have to name the source to the other unnamed source so they could comment about what the first unnamed source said? Well, all right. Cameron Smith will help us work this out. He's going to join us when we get back. Also, remember, you can check us out online, the stream, fmtalk1065.com. Also, on the TuneIn radio app, get us right there. And yeah, coming up in hour number two, really interesting theories about what can be done to deal with flooding going forward. Not just storm surge, not just things on the coast, but interior flooding and what hasn't been done. We'll talk to a professor from LSU about that. It's going to be pretty interesting coming up at 1 o'clock. All right, we get to it with Cameron Smith next, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1218 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Monday style. Glad to have you along. I'll get an update from Dr. Bill on our forecast at 1235, but I can do like the the uninformed, just a I'm your citizen forecaster without the degrees or anything. I'm just looking out there at rain showers affecting a good bit of Mobile County and Baldwin County right now. Big thunderstorm pretty much running down the western side of Baldwin County on the eastern shore. Rain throughout Mobile and points north as well. Dr. Bill says expect this for the next few days as we stay on a rainy pattern. 77 now. And we'll talk to Cameron Smith in just a second. I do want to go to John in Spanish Fort, because John says, let's see here, Trump loves Russia. Hey, John.
How you doing, Sean? It's your progressive voice from Spanish Fort. Hope you're having a good day today.
Oh, man, I'm good. Yeah, how about you?
Fine, thank you. I know you're going up with Cameron. I'm sorry I didn't know he was coming on. I was just wondering, I perceive you as a libertarian who leans toward conservative. Would I be correct on that?
That's probably pretty fair. That's fair, yeah.
Okay. And obviously you know my political leanings and so forth. And as a moment of full disclosure, I have an adopted son from Russia. We adopted our little boy from Russia two years ago. He's 12 right now.
Cool.
So, and I'm 62, so I might be the oldest old father of a 12-year-old in five counties.
Now you're making me feel better, because at 46, I'm already having trouble with, you know, a 12 and an 8. But yes, so you have my sympathy.
And it's my first, so I'm looking for a manual somewhere.
They're not.
But my question is, I don't understand from the conservative point of view the defense of Trump over Russia by conservatives, or the head in the sand of Russia over conservatives. I can understand campaign finance reform or judge appointments or so forth where a conservative and a liberal might butt heads against each other. But when it comes to, we're not going to say collusion or whatever like that, but it seems to be a connection with Russian interests, where the defense of Trump comes from.
Hey, you know, it depends on what level you're talking. Are you talking about establishing collusion, or are you just saying it's a friendly attitude? Because if you look at the things that has happened during the Trump administration, there's been a lot of saber rattling back towards Putin and Russia. So, I mean, I don't know that you can say it's all one way.
Well, I agree that there's been saber rattling. And again, as a liberal, I might get to use this term. Is that a fake news saber rattling?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess until war would break out, God forbid, right?
Right. I just look for some type of connection. It's almost like a cliff notes on how I can have a discussion with a conservative friend about why are you defending Trump on Russia, where if my party did this, in my opinion, your head would pop off your shoulder.
I mean, like when Barack Obama told Medvedev, I just need a little time after the election, I'll have more freedom on this.
Exactly. Or the uranium thing with Secretary Clinton. I don't understand. And I know there's lots of stuff going on today, and maybe it's a discussion for a number of times.
It is, probably.
But I do respect your opinion, and I just kind of wonder where I have a leg to stand on there, if I do. And again, thank you for taking my call, and have a great day.
Hey, you too, John. No problem. I mean, I just, you know, yeah, we are going to get into some other matters going on. I don't want to sweep that under the rug. I just see it as being, I see a lot of noise without much substance to it yet. I mean, I'm not somebody who's going to say, la, 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 I'll never listen to evidence, but I hadn't seen anything yet that makes me think there's, you know, some quid pro quo going on. I haven't seen it. All right, we're not going to get into, and I hate it for him, especially Dalton having to answer the calls. We're not doing Trump Russia right now, because we're going to introduce my buddy Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. I've got this handled quickly. Doc Holliday from Tombstone had some great quotes on this. My hypocrisy knows no bounds, and I have not yet begun to defile myself. Both of those can apply to all of politics right now.
Well said. Well said. And I want to get into the situation with Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford and Ramirez. But first, I got to have some help here, because I opened up the show by reading the latest story over the Wall Street Journal about Rod Rosenstein at the White House, and whether he was in the same story. You had people familiar with the matter, unnamed sources, saying that he had been fired by President Trump, and then another unnamed source said he's not been fired, but he's probably going to resign, and that's what he's probably at the White House doing. And then somebody else saying that it was just a joke, and he's really not going to be fired. I mean, all three unnamed sources disagreeing with each other. My head is spinning from this.
Yeah, that's a pretty terrible joke, if that's the joke. I mean, you got to really hate somebody for that to be a joke. But to be quite honest, I asked friends at DOJ, and they understandably, given all the headlines, have said, you know, nothing has been confirmed. And that's where we are. I mean, I think there's happenings right now. We may see Rosenstein on the way out. We may not. But everybody wants to jump on the news story. They want to have the first breaking news thing. And
but
when did this started
right.
going and people started reaching conclusions?
Yeah, I think you're right. And they're reaching different conclusions, but speaking with authority, which is cracking me up. But we'll put that story up on Twitter. Y'all can peruse it and give me your take on it. All right. I by the way, just side note, too, does that kick in with the, let's say it happens, it's a firing of Rod Rosenstein. Does it kick in some constitutional crisis like it would be the firing of Jeff Sessions?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the question is, obviously, that position presently oversees the Mueller investigation. The real question would be, okay, does this now move to the Solicitor General? I mean, who's now overseeing the Mueller investigation? If, for example, I think it would set off a little bit of uproar if we saw, you know, a Trump acolyte go in and supervise the Mueller investigation. Let's wait to see if Rosenstein's still there or not at the end of the day before we start jumping into, well, you know, here's the crisis, here's the non-crisis. I guess it's a slow news day and you got to have something to talk about.
Yeah, but it's not, right? So that's the thing, it's not. And I want to get into that because that is the focus of your piece over at AL.com, and that's the discussion of Judge Kavanaugh, and as you said, the Kavanaugh standard. What is the Kavanaugh standard?
Well, I think we got to be real careful right now. We do need to hear from Dr. Ford. I think Republicans handled this perfectly in saying we want to hear from you, whether it's public or private, whether it's a female attorney questioning you, or whether it's senators. We'll accommodate you. I think that was the right call. It was the right move. The problem is we have to answer a very specific question. Is an allegation alone sufficient to derail a confirmation to the Supreme Court? I understand that there are a lot of Democrats. They've already made up their mind. They're not going to vote for Kavanaugh because of other issues. But, for example, Republicans, say a Jeff Flake, is an allegation alone enough to derail a Supreme Court confirmation? And I raise that question because I think the issue here is we want to hear from Dr. Ford, but we've heard from numerous other folks saying, no, we don't recall that. We don't recall that at all. And yet, you know, you've got Democrats running ads and saying, we believe you, Dr. Ford, we believe you.
Right.
I think we should hear her. But if you're saying she's definitively telling the truth and she's 100% accurate, I'm going to ask you, well, based on what? And if you're on the other side saying, we don't need to hear this at all, she's clearly lying, well, based on what?
Right.
And so that's where I am on all this.
But you brought something up I want to get back to. Why is it, and I asked this question, and not just rhetorically, but why is it that those that are saying, you know what, he wasn't present, this didn't happen, why are those voices like, is it because they have not announced their name with it? Or there seems to be a footnote. It seems like, here's the main story, and I guess maybe it's the salacious nature of the accusation, but here's the main story, and this is at this level, and then there's these other things, you know, down in paragraph 25 or whatever, these footnotes.
Yeah, well, and then this sort of, I guess we'll call it the latest accusation that came out in his college years, where even in the story, it's, well, I'm not sure I'm remembering this exactly right. This could be wrong.
Yeah.
That's terrifying that a reputable publication would even run with that story.
Yeah, let me do this.
And it's just a play on the news cycle.
Let me roll this. So people, if they didn't hear it, about 40 seconds here. This is from earlier this morning on CBS. Jane Meyer from The New Yorker being questioned here on the sourcing.
Jane, the corroborating witness, which you says has all the details, including Kavanaugh's name, where did that witness come from and where did that witness get the information about this from, if that person doesn't know Ramirez?
He remembers it from he was in the same dorm, same little building on Yale's old campus, and he remembers it clearly. I asked him, you know, of course we're going to be very careful. No, as I've said, he heard it from someone who was there, and as I've said, we interviewed him, and I said to him, are you sure that it was Brett Kavanaugh? He said, I am 100% sure.
But he, as you admit, he was not at the party. Jane, let me ask.
Okay, so, I mean, I heard it from my brother's friend's cousin's aunt's uncle about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, this should raise more flags than anything else. The fact that the corroboration standard here is basically, I heard it from somebody and I said it was true. Well, what? Like, you have no firsthand knowledge of something. There's no way that, like, we as a matter of, like, a society, when we have something like that that's hearsay, we don't usually, particularly not in a criminal proceeding, we don't admit that kind of thing. And so the idea that, oh, well, this is clearly evidence that Kavanaugh is basically a predator is ridiculous. And I think the point of my article was to say we need to be real careful on this standard. Because if the standard is an allegation uncorroborated, in this case, you've got an allegation that's not only uncorroborated, but you have people saying actively, no, this is not true. When you have that as the standard for derailing a Supreme Court confirmation, there's a lot of positions that are up for confirmation. And if all that the opposing party has to do is raise an allegation, that's a very low standard to derail confirmations because, and I asked somebody point blank this today, I said, imagine that this is a different scenario, it's not Brett Kavanaugh, and somebody is alleged to have committed a felony as a juvenile. Is that enough? The allegation alone, there's no charges brought, no criminal proceeding, no nothing, just an allegation. Is that enough to derail the confirmation?
We'll get more of this when we get right back. Coming back with more with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute at AL.com right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Our guest Cameron Smith from AL.com and the R Street Institute. I got to play this. This is what I was thinking about when I played that Jane Meyer clip from the New Yorker about there are two things. So yeah, Dr. Ford we're talking about, and also the latest accusation from Deborah Ramirez and how they substantiated the information. It sounded, I was listening to a clip from CBS this morning, but in my mind, as I heard it, I heard, hey, children of the 80s, you'll remember this movie. Remember when Ferris wasn't there in class and they were trying to figure out what happened to Ferris Bueller?
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
I guess it's pretty serious, Cameron.
Yeah, and that's where we are, is that it's like, well, you know, this is a statement. This is an allegation, and it is a serious one. Take it seriously, but it begs for corroboration. That's what I say in the article. It begs for the details to be filled in. It begs for someone else to come forward and say, yeah, hey, I was there. I saw her run out of the room, and, you know, I know that people don't like that. I know that they don't like, you know, particularly Democrats, they don't like the notion that, hey, an allegation like this that's very, very serious needs to be corroborated. But, like, that's how this needs to work, because when somebody makes an allegation against someone that's that serious, they need to have the ability to defend themselves. And asking Brett Kavanaugh to just say, like, it's ridiculous that he's, like, turning in his calendars. Like, here are my calendars. That, I mean, first of all, who puts a house party on a calendar? That's a terrible idea. Sounds like something a Supreme Court justice might do. But it's this notion of how do you prove something that may not have happened in that way? I mean, but yet she should be believed, he should not be believed. I think that we need to hear from folks, and senators need to make a judgment call, and that's a tough judgment call. And I don't think that it's fair to conflate, hey, this means if you vote for Kavanaugh or you think that this vote should proceed, that you somehow don't treat women seriously, you don't prize their autonomy, you don't want to treat them well. That's just false, because there's a big difference in saying, hey, sexual assault is okay, which it's clearly not ever, and saying, hey, when you allege that somebody commits assault, that's criminal in terms of the conduct. That's very serious. There needs to be some support of that allegation, because I'm afraid that we're going to get in a situation where it doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, there's going to be allegations that come forth every time. And if that's the standard, that's going to make this a tough sled in the Senate going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about all the different nominations, but I'm thinking about Supreme Court going forward. Will we have unfilled seats for long periods of time if this is the new level that the game is played at? I mean, if it's just, well, somebody said that they did something one time, and because we can't prove that it's, you know, by the time they matriculate to a point that they're going to be in the Supreme Court, their teenage years are now outside the statute of limitations, which I want to talk about in a second. So therefore, you must deny.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is a situation where I hear a lot of, you know, frankly, I know women that I'm close to who have had similar stories of assault. I mean, it's tragic. But I understand why a lot of women can say, hey, I think that that's more credible because something like that happened to me. I totally understand that. I'm sympathetic to that. And I think that hearing her out is important. But at the same time, I think in this context, it's serious enough that we need corroboration. Of course, Democrats are saying, hey, the allegation is serious enough. You should pick somebody else. Like, we should not confirm Kavanaugh. We should move on. Again, I'm just very concerned that if that's the standard, well, we nominate somebody else, and then we have, you know, another allegation. Maybe it's not sexual in nature. Maybe it's, you know, felony drunk driving that was pushed under the rug or something like that. I don't know. But, I mean, I worry that people do make mistakes. They make sometimes some severe ones. And if the answer is you have to be perfect with no allegation for a period of time up to a Supreme Court confirmation hearing, if that's the standard we set, that's going to be impossible to fill. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of differentiation there, but why? I mean, if we got felony conduct in this situation and felony conduct of a different nature, what is the delineation there?
Okay, but here's the, and I'm with you, and I think the broader and more interesting discussion does come in to that. And do you use accusations of sexual misconduct, sexual assault as the, you know, as the nuclear option these days? But it seems like it's, am I the only one that's stuck on this? Maybe I'm missing something. Seems to be even more simple to me because you have some outright denial coming from Brett Kavanaugh on this. To me, that one, if you could prove that he's, you know, he said he wasn't at a party and you can prove he was there, then I see a 50-something-year-old Brett Kavanaugh, not a 17-year-old, and I go, there's a liar and there's a reason not to do it.
Yeah, if you can prove Kavanaugh's lying about his denial, then no, he shouldn't be confirmed because he's lying and willing to lie under oath. I mean, that's a big deal.
There you go. If I'm the Democrats and I'm so sure about this and I believe this, then just prove he was there. Just prove the denial was and you know what? You'll even get guys like me saying, you know what? You're not the guy. You are not the guy.
Well, and I'm saying play this out a bunch of different ways. I mean, and I'm a nerd, so I try different scenarios. Let's say Brett Kavanaugh got in a bar fight and actually assaulted someone, like, non-sexually, just beat the daylights out of them. Charges weren't brought, and then that person comes forward and says, hey, look, he assaulted me. And, you know, he beat me senseless, but he was drunk and was aggressive, and, you know, he wasn't charged, but I'm just bringing this up now because it shows what kind of person he was as a teenager or as a young college student. Well, is that enough? I mean, that's an allegation of felonious conduct. Where are we going to draw the line? I think that does concern me because I think if in this instance you say, well, this type of sexual assault allegation, that's enough. That's clearly, you know, stops the confirmation. But an assault situation, well, that's different. Well, why is it different?
Yeah.
Help me understand that and why that would not be disqualifying.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think I'd like to hear somebody honestly try to answer that one. And then they said something to the effect of, well, we won't even get into the specifics of that. We'll talk about what Brett Kavanaugh was doing, going to keg parties and beer parties underage. Are they really? And I'm not encouraging this behavior. You and I are both dads. I'm not, you know, I'm on the lookout and the watch for this. But you're going to tell me that that's a DQ? You're going to tell me, members of the Senate, you're going to tell me that's a DQ? Okay, I want some FBI investigations. Let's go back into everybody's past and see if they were at a keg party before they were of age. Give me a break.
Well, and there's also another thing that I think this is, I'd point to the folks on the right who don't like Dr. Ford and these accusations. Like, we got to get over this slut shaming, this, like, trying to make her sound like she was some kind of, like, morally compromised woman
who
was just running around asking.
That's horrible.
That is garbage.
I agree with you.
Don't do that.
I agree with you. Yeah, that's why it has to go. You know what? On both sides, what you describe is a character assassination versus looking at facts and trying to overlay what's truth and what's not truth. It is it's the business of Washington. It's the business of our public discourse these days. If I'm, you know, if I'm winning an argument, then I'm a flame-throwing radical, you know, right wing, whatever, you know, or yeah, I'm a misogynist. I'm a racist. I'm something else versus talking about facts.
Yeah, and I think that is what we have to fight against. But I will tell you, I mean, as a conservative, as somebody who loves the rule of law, as somebody who cares a lot about civil liberties, if I hear somebody tell me she was asking for it one more time, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, that's
because that is garbage.
I agree.
It has no place in this discourse. The notion that, you know, a woman, regardless of how much she has to drink, regardless of, you know, her personal decisions at a party, if she doesn't give consent to something, that needs to be respected. I don't care what she's done.
I completely agree.
That's a line that people are trying to blur right now. That should not be blurred.
Well, if they're blurring that, then you know what? People that support Kavanaugh to police their own ranks and kick those people to the curb, because that is it's not acceptable. But at the same time, just saying because an accusation's made, and then you have people that say, let's say specifically Judge Kavanaugh saying, I was not there. Is that, I mean, can't we, am I missing that? He says he wasn't even there. It was not like, well, we had this relationship and she interpreted it one way and this happened another way. He says he wasn't there. It seems like we can prove that one way or another.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the difficulty here where we are, in that we don't really know where there was or when it was.
Yeah, what
and
about
so,
that?
You know, it creates a situation where, how is he supposed to deny that? That between these several years, there was a house party, and it was in a location in Montgomery County, Maryland. Okay, if you're a teenager during those years and you do stuff, that can be a lot of venues. Even still, he is coming out and he's saying, I don't care, I'm telling you, that's not true. And again, I think she should say her story under oath, give him an opportunity to respond. And I don't think Republican senators at this point, I mean, they understand the politics of getting up there and acting like bullies. Like, they should not do that, and they understand there's going to be consequences if they do. And that's the reason they're even offering to have a female attorney come in and ask the questions. And understandably, that there's some pushback from the Ford camp saying, oh, no, we would rather that the, you know, male senators do it. No kidding. I mean, this is an opportunity. The politics here are there as well, regardless of whether this is true or not. This is a political football, too, and don't forget that.
I'm talking to Cameron Smith with AL.com and the R Street Institute. I mentioned that statute of limitations. I mean, is that the reason? You think about statute of limitations as an attorney. I mean, what's the purpose of that? I mean, what does that defend against?
Well, the biggest issue is spoliation of evidence, is the idea that when you're 10, 20, 30 years down the road, it's really, really hard to look at what happened. Memories do change. Memories do fade. I mean, this is well documented. This is a fact. And so there's, hey, you should have some certainty that people can't, if there's a disputed incident of an assault or a theft or whatever, that can't change down the road. Now, there's some crimes, like murder, for example, where you don't usually have a statute of limitations because it's that serious of a crime. But even then, in those contexts, a lot of times it's hard to prove some of those cases, like, because there's a lot less information. I do think that there's more these days in terms of hard evidence because of the digital footprint, stuff like that. But I do think creating certainty for defendants that you're not going to be asked to defend a claim long, long down the road for some of these offenses that do amount to she's making an allegation, he's denying it. I understand why they have statute of limitations, but some of the formulations of this incident, I don't think the statute of limitations exists. And I think that even a Maryland prosecutor looking at it right now is probably saying, I just don't see an ability to move forward in this case because there's not a lot of detail. And the folks that were there, you've got folks saying this didn't happen this way.
All right, just circles back to your premise from your story over at AL.com of, you know, what what's the standard here? I mean, what is the standard? And I got to ask you that, too. I mean, what is the... It used to be, right? And I know, let's not talk about, you know, well, I remember when, because it's been 20-plus years since that's changed. But the standard used to be, for the confirmation process, it was to make sure that they were a decent human being, right? And they were, all they said they were in their education and everything, and able to do the job. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's obviously changed. I mean, we've seen people not get confirmed. I mean, Jeff Sessions wasn't confirmed as a federal judge. You know, this did happen. It was not common, but there's different reasons why that would happen. I think generally there was more civility because there wasn't the echo chamber of social media and modern media where it's just a 24-hour cycle all the time. And to be blunt, this Supreme Court seat matters a lot. This is Kennedy's seat. I mean, it wasn't like replacing Scalia with Gorsuch, where it was like, okay, you took like a very conservative jurist and replaced him with a pretty conservative jurist. This is a swing mm-hmm, vote right here. Mm-hmm. And to replace a Kennedy with a conservative jurist is a big deal for a lot of cases. Democrats know that. They're going to fight this. I don't care who's in there. They're going to fight and fight and fight and hope that Republicans throw in the towel. You know, my concern is, let's say Republicans hold the Senate. Let's say that Kavanaugh, with the nomination is withdrawn, Republicans hold the Senate in the midterms. Okay, what if it's a Bill Pryor? You know, what if it's a Judge Sykes? I mean, we're going to have the same battles, even if Kavanaugh isn't confirmed, because that seat is that important.
I think if the Republicans throw in the towel, you know, any kind of support they're asking from the Republican ranks to show up and vote for them in the midterms may be diminished. You know what I'm saying? If they're not fighting for Kavanaugh, who seems to be a fairly moderate in the scheme of things, if they see that the Republicans won't stand up and fight there, they're probably going to ask, what are they going to fight for?
And I'll tell you the politics of the midterm. I mean, if I'm a Democrat and I can submarine Kavanaugh right now, and I'm just talking, again, raw politics
right
here, I'm going to go into the midterms and say, you better give us the Senate, because if you don't, they're going to get this seat. So this is all about, this is in the same way the Scalia vacancy created momentum for Trump. This could create huge momentum for Senate Democrats if they can take this into the midterms, and
yep,
they'll raise a ton of money.
Yeah, is there any chance, I mean, well, any chance, that's a foolish question. What do you believe the chances are with some success? Because I've been told that I was, you know, all wet on that I thought maybe there could be some delay tactic that would get this beyond the midterm. But is there a chance? I mean, if let's say Kavanaugh steps down, you know, withdraws his name and somebody else comes up, is this something that could not be finished business, let alone next week when the Supreme Court gets to work, but through the midterms in November?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. I think Republicans are going to look at this and say, you know, what are some solutions? I mean, they could get creative. I mean, they could do something like say, well, you know what? Trump wants Jeff Sessions out as AG. We know he's clearly confirmable. Let's nominate him to the Supreme Court. Gets him out as AG, puts him in a situation where, I mean, Democrats are going to have a hard time going after him for corruption because he's done this so many times. And so it makes them really uncomfortable. They might pull a creative play. I'll put it this way. Unless Dr. Ford testifies and produces additional evidence that says you guys need to, there's more here than just what I'm saying, you need to look here, here, and here. Unless that happens, I see Kavanaugh, a vote happening, it being largely along party lines. You might see Manchin vote to confirm or some of the Democrats that are in sort of swing areas. But bottom line is, I think Kavanaugh is either confirmed, that vote scheduled shortly after this hearing, or it's very, very apparent that Kavanaugh's done.
I love the Machiavellian idea of Sessions to SCOTUS. That's brilliant. My buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the R Street Institute. People want to continue this conversation. I know they can do it through underneath the story there at AL.com, or if they reach out to you on social media. Where are you hanging out at?
I'm at D. Cameron Smith on Twitter at al.com/opinion. You can just find me kind of anywhere and yell at me, tackle me. I'm always ready. My head's on a swivel.
There it is. Just keep your feet in motion, head on a swivel. And yes, I do. I purposely ended that with a preposition just to try to draw you all out. 1251 FM Talk 106.5. Got phones coming to y'all next at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, hope you filled up last week. See that over at Market Watch, Brent crude has risen above $81 a barrel for the first time since 2014 after OPEC refuses to boost output. Well, listen, they won't do that. It'll make the prices go continue to go back up, which in a weird way will lead to better business for American companies drilling in the Bakken oil field. But yeah, for us there at the pump, obviously prices will continue to go up. Says market is growing concerned about the undersupply as U.S. sanctions on Iran threaten to reduce the supply by about 1 million barrels a day. And then you have OPEC saying they're not increasing and prices go up. All right, telephones and away we go. First up and in Mobile, Robert. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. So what's your take on this?
Okay, my take on this is that I am not an attorney, and I'm not going to profess to be one. I have a friend of mine that is retired. He was an attorney in Mobile for at least 40 years. We would all know if I named him, and he was considered a super lawyer in the state. Bottom line is he handled criminal law, and I had several conversations with him. And he says, if you have the audacity or you got the big ones to come forward and say something about somebody, make an accusation that could be criminal, and then all of a sudden you come up with, I can't remember. He said, Robert, he said, my expectation of that person right there is that they're a liar. He said, anytime I've run into it in 40 years, 99.999% of the time, these people lie.
What percentage lie?
99.999.
Wow. So what is that you think that who's lying?
I think that Ross is lying. Bottom line. I think she's a liar, and it's unfortunate. I'm not a hater, but to come up with this, Feinstein held on to that letter for months.
But she didn't. Devil's advocate for a second, Robert. She didn't, though. Right? Dr. Ford didn't. Feinstein did.
Feinstein had that letter, of course. And Feinstein knew what she was doing. She orchestrated this. There's no doubt in my mind. And if anybody can't see it, I hate to say it's blind.
Well, Robert, and I hear where you're coming. I wish I had your certainty about life. But every decade that's gone on, my certainty about things is a little gray on the edges till I get more information. Now, you may turn out to be 100% right. 100% right. But what I like to do is to get the information, let the information come out and try to make a judgment. But do I think that this has political wings and a political grift on it? Heck yes, I do. David's next.
Sean, I'm calling in to confirm that I am not eligible to hold political office anymore because
We already knew that. I mean, we had posted that information.
According to her, I walked when I was in kindergarten, I walked up to the prettiest girl in the school on the playground and punched her in the chest. So I'm not eligible to hold political office anymore if that's the new standard. And of course, I'm talking about the new accusations that came to light last night in the New Yorker piece, where Kavanaugh was accused of flashing a young lady.
Yes.
I mean, even if they're true, and I doubt, there's been no corroboration on anybody's part that they're true, if that's the new standard we're going to hold people up to, that's very, very, very dangerous, because even if it's true, flashing somebody on a college campus is not a federal crime that the FBI needs to investigate. That's something that the school needs to handle.
There we go. David, appreciate the call. We do have some more of that corroboration. Can we roll with that? Can we?
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last
night. That's not that's from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Come on, people. We're right back. Hour number two. This is going to be interesting. Flooding from hurricanes inland and what could be done to abate it. We'll talk about it next.